You're listening to the Carnegie Tsinghua China in the World podcast, a series of conversations with Chinese and international experts on China's foreign policy, international role, and China's relations with the world, brought to you from the Carnegie Tsinghua Center, located here in Beijing. I'm Paul Hanley, the director of the Carnegie Tsinghua Center, and I'll be your host today. Today, we're delighted to welcome back to the Carnegie Tsinghua podcast one of Carnegie Tsinghua's own resident scholars, Dr. Wang Tao, who just recently published a new report entitled Managing China's Pet Coke Problem. Wang Tao is a resident scholar and runs the Energy and Climate Program based here at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Tao's research focuses on China's climate and energy policy, with particular attention to unconventional oil and natural gas, transportation, electric vehicles, and international climate negotiation. Wang Tao, we're excited to learn from you today about your new report. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you, Paul. It's my pleasure.
I would like to first take apart the title of your new report, which we have here in front of us, Managing China's Pet Coke Problem. What is pet coke, and why is China's growing use of pet coke a problem?
Well, thank you, Paul. Pet coke, or otherwise known as petroleum coke, is a byproduct of the petroleum refinery process. It's kind of like the bottom of the crude that's come out, so the last and the heaviest product when the refinery is done. We are talking about two sorts of the pet coke. There is one type of pet coke which has lower sulfur content, and most of them will be used in the metal manufacturing, such as aluminum or steels. But what caught our eyes more these days is the increasing volume of the high sulfur content of pet coke, which is coming out with much higher sulfur content, and because of that, it cannot be used in most of these traditional areas in the metal manufacturing, and actually being used as alternative fuel to the coal. And that is causing problem because, first of all, we didn't know how much is being used, and secondly, this is actually quite dirty in terms of the emissions.
So we don't know how many tons of pet coke China produced last year?
We know roughly about that, but that is as good as we can estimate. And we also got some data from the official agency and also consulting companies. But people don't really know what has been consumed in each of those plants and where it has been used. And that actually matters very much. And we also want to know more details in the breakout of the different sectors.
Why is this an attractive alternative fuel source for industry here in China?
The pet coke itself is actually, as I said before, it's a bottom of the product.
Yeah.
So it actually, most of the refineries got a lot of the profits, or most of their profits, out from these liquid products like the gasoline, diesel, and other wax and other kind of products. So the pet coke is already kind of like the end. It's not so much mattering for the profits of the refineries. And in the international market, the pet coke, which we will mention later, is actually cheaper than coal, especially when it's exported from the United States. So that makes it very competitive fuel when the price of coal is very high. On the other hand, in China, we also knew that when the economy was very hot for the last few years, the coal supply was at a stretch. A lot of the coals cannot reach to the small and medium users because they either lack of the relations or they find difficult to get to guarantee the supply from the state-owned mines. So they actually turn to alternative fuels, and pet coke is one of that, and which is also very cheap. So they've been very popular in some of the smaller users.
But with the higher sulfur content, pet coke can be very dangerous for climate and local air quality. Is this phenomenon known to Chinese policymakers?
Exactly. I think pet coke, especially the high sulfur pet coke, actually has a lot of damage to the climate change efforts as well as to the Chinese government's own efforts to reducing the air pollution. For example, the pet coke is the high sulfur pet coke has very high sulfur content compared with even the very dirty Chinese coal. We're talking about Chinese coal has about 1% in average about sulfur content, whereas in pet coke, especially high sulfur pet coke, it's usually at above 3%, and some of them could be as high as 5 to 7%. So that means if you're burning 1 ton of pet coke, you're equivalent to burning 3 or 5 or even 7 tons of the coal in terms of the sulfur dioxide. On the other hand, it also has higher content of the carbon in the pet coke. So its own carbon emission released from the combustion will be higher than coal. Mm. What we haven't included is also the life cycle analysis of the petcoke, because it comes from the heavy oil. So its own extraction, refinery, and transportation also incurs much higher greenhouse gases emissions. So that actually is very dirty in terms of contribution to both climate change and air quality.
Mm-hmm. And is this phenomenon well known to policymakers, or is
the Chinese policymakers has already gathered some information about this? As we said before, they start also to release the official data on consumption of petcoke starting from 2010. But we also understand that the lack of very detailed information about, especially at the user level, how much has been used and how it's being used and which sector or which users in each sector are using them, and whether they have been desulfurized before they release to the air. So that is something we want to do more research on.
Well, and perhaps your report can have a positive impact on letting policymakers here in China understand the ramifications. In your report, you also mentioned the special role played by the U.S. in facilitating the use of petcoke in China. How exactly is that? How is the U.S. involved in this process?
Well, as we mentioned before, the petcoke is actually a byproduct of refineries. So whoever has the largest refinery capacity has the potential to produce more petcoke. And in the world now, U.S. and China are the number one and number two refineries in the world. So U.S. actually produce more petcoke than anyone else in the world. With the increased import of the heavy oil and tar sands oil from Canada and Venezuela, the U.S. actually produced more of the high sulfur petcoke. The volume is increasing very quickly and also starting piling up at the refineries in U.S. And on the other hand, the EPA recently, actually in 2013, stopped issuing the new combustion license for the users in U.S. So it actually become a redundant waste. So you cannot find a new user with it. So the refineries actually start to piling them up in some of the places like the riverbanks. And then later on, we heard the very infamous cases, for example, in the River Detroit, the people actually start to recognize there is a huge piling of the black stuff actually caught their eyes and wants to know what it is, and actually causing damage to the both view, and also there is a concern of health. So they start to protest and asking the refinery to remove them. And then as a result, the petcoke become very unwelcome in the United States, and the refineries actually eager to find a way to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. So starting from 2008, actually, together with the increased demand from China, the import or the export from the U.S. of the high sulfur petcoke to China has increased significantly. It rose about 20 times in less than 5 years. Wow. So as a result, together with China's own production in the domestic and together with the import from U.S., China now become the world's largest user of the high sulfur petcoke. Mm-hmm. That actually made a quite an alarming situation for China.
You talk often about the changing global energy landscape. The United States, for example, with its shale revolution. The U.S. is also reducing its imports from the Middle East, relying more on heavier crude from Venezuela and Canadian oil sands. How is this changing global energy landscape having an effect on the petcoke problem?
Exactly. As we already touched upon a little bit, U.S. is actually starting to reduce the import from the Middle East and instead increasing the import of the heavy oil and super heavy oil from Canada and Venezuela. And that actually increased the result or production of the high sulfur petcoke. Mm. And on the other hand, if you look at the global level, all the conventional oils actually start to decline. So we are not really facing a drying up of the oil itself, but we are actually facing a declined production of conventional oil. And that conventional oil is actually produced a low sulfur petcoke. Mm-hmm. So that has been replaced by the increased exploration and supply of unconventional oils, like the very dirty and high sulfur and heavy oils from places like some of them even from Middle East. So if you look into the future, then we are definitely looking into a world with more high sulfur petcoke productions. And at the same time, China is also increasing the import from the Middle East, some of the high sulfur and heavy oil, and China itself, the production of high sulfur petcoke is increasing. And Middle East, let's not really forget them, they are trying to integrate their own industry, oil industry. They're not happy just to export their oil, so they are also expanding their refinery capacity very quickly, arguably one of the fastest regions in the world. And they will also end up with a lot of high sulfur petcoke. Mm-hmm. So we have to find a way to deal with this increase in the production of high sulfur petcoke globally, not being addressed just only by one country exporting to another country or even to a third country. So that has to be a global solution and has to be brought up to a global discussion as well.
Wang Tao, you mentioned that this particular issue or problem is not well understood by policymakers here in China. The Chinese State Council's Air Pollution Action Plan only references high sulfur petcoke imports. It does not look to target domestic production. What combination of measures would you suggest or advocate to raise the awareness of this petcoke problem and to mitigate its impacts?
The State Council's own action plan only refers to, as you described, to the import of the petcoke. But I think there has been no measures applied to them yet because of the concern of industries. On the other hand, the MEP, the Ministry of Environment Protection, has already started identifying the high sulfur petcoke as a dirty fuel and will be banning of the use of it in the specifically areas with high concern or high risk of air pollution. So it's down to the implementation of them to control the use of it. But I think there are areas that we still need to improve before we can have a better effectiveness of the petcoke management. For one, we first have to increase and improve the statistic of the petcoke use. And at the moment, the data is still inaccurate and less open than ideal, and people have difficulties to understand where it has been transferred, how it's been used. So first of all, I think it's the data, and we have to improve the statistics. Secondly, we also need to start employing more of the economic tools, such as the carbon pricing or even carbon tax or certain tax subject to the high sulfur petcoke. So we will be able to change the distorted price advantages of the petcoke to other fuels. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, the petcoke is just way too cheap, so people will always have that economic incentive to use it. So only rely on the command and control measures, we're not going to remove that. We have to make this together with the economic tool or instrument.
Are there ways technology can play a role?
There is, certainly. For example, we also can identify one of the technologies called circulative fluidized boilers, or otherwise known as CFB boilers. They actually could quite effectively use the petcoke as a normal fuel and remove the most of the sulfur dioxide. And that will alleviate some of the concern of air pollution. In fact, some of the state-owned refineries in China are already using these technologies because they are one of the largest users and subject to very stringent monitoring from the MEP. So they can remove that part of the consumption of high sulfur petcoke. But we also need to make this mandate and strengthen the control of the sulfur dioxide emissions from other and large number of the small and medium users. There is another one, is actually to using another type of technology to control the production of high sulfur petcoke. If you will be able to add another set of the facilities to add more hydrogens at the end of the refineries, you will be able to actually transfer some of the petcoke into more production of liquid fuel, which is more valuable. So in that way, we can also reduce the production of the high sulfur petcoke. That is difficult and costly, and also requires much better management skills to the refineries. But I think that would be a good way forward, and the Chinese government should also support the refineries to take that part.
Well, Wang Tao, thank you very much for spending time with me today, and congratulations on your report.
Thank you.
That's it for this edition of the Carnegie Tsinghua China in the World podcast. If you'd like to read Wang Tao's report on managing China's petcoke problem, you can find that report and his other reports on Carnegie Tsinghua's website, www.carnegietsinghua.org. I encourage you to explore our site and see the work of all our scholars at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next time.